I'll now read Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 to 28 in English, and you'll find it on the inside of your information sheets. And as Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside, and on the way he said to them, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and deliver him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified, and he will be raised on the third day." Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your kingdom." Jesus answered, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink?" They said to him, "We are able." He said to them, "You will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." And when the ten heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many."
Friends, good morning. My name's Murray. If you haven't met me before, thanks to Rhoda and to Andrew for reading the passage this morning. But this passage feels wrong, doesn't it? It feels wrong on several levels, not least that it is not about Jesus dying on the cross on Good Friday. But more than that, I mean, there's a man here, Jesus, going to his death. We're on the road to Jerusalem just a week or so before that first Easter Friday, and in verses 18 and 19, Jesus is going up. He's going to be condemned to death. He's going to be mocked and flogged and crucified. That's just wrong. But then the disciples' response to that in verse 21 is to ask for family favours, to ask, "Can my sons sit at your right and at your left hand?" I mean, family favours, asking for them is just wrong. Well, especially when they're not for your family anyway. And then in verse 26, we see that the disciples have just got everything upside down. "Whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave." And yet, even today, those words are just wrong. You don't treat people like that. Now, we know where this passage is going. It is Easter Friday. We know where it is going to end up. But on any other day and in any other context, this passage is just wrong. And I'm going to do something wrong this morning as well. I am going to talk about God's wrath. It's not exactly a popular topic, but it is what Easter is all about at its core. I'm going to have a look at God's wrath as symbolised in the cup that we read about there in verse 22. And I want to think a little bit more deeply about how God's wrath and how God's love fit together on Easter. So let's get started. We'll start with our cup there in verse 22, but we need the right image of a cup in our mind. And I found a whole lot of images of cups from the internet. This one, unfortunately, is not good enough. It is too caffeinated. Let's try another one. That one is too plastic, so we'll have to move on from that one. Too alcoholic. Too commercial. No. Too plain. Too, oh gosh, too pink. Ah, there we go. Now there's the right sort of cup we need to have in mind. A cup or a chalice for drinking wine, drinking fancy wine. And this image of the cup that Jesus is talking about comes from the Old Testament. It comes from lots of different places, but in particular from the prophet Jeremiah. Here are a few verses from Jeremiah 25. Thus the Lord, the God of Israel, said to me, that is Jeremiah, take from my hand this cup of the wine of wrath, and make all the nations to whom I send you drink it. They shall drink and stagger and be crazed because of the sword that I am sending among them. Well, the first and obvious thing is that it's a cup of wine. But it's a cup of wine, it's a cup of wrath. God's wrath. This is not one of those sweet dessert wines that you eat after your meal. This is bitter wine. It has a sharp taste. It gives you a slap in the face. But more than just a slap, isn't it? It's a sword. They shall drink and stagger and be crazed because of the sword that I am sending among them. God's wrath here is bringing war. It is bringing destruction. A few verses later, in verse 27, God continues to speak. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, drink, be drunk, and vomit. Fall and rise no more because of the sword that I'm sending among you. The cup of wrath is a poison cup. It brings sickness. It brings drunkenness. It brings death. In fact, I struggle to find anything good about this cup at all. It is entirely bad. And it gets worse. In verses 17 to 26 in Jeremiah, we read that it's drunk by all the kingdoms of the world. The cup is shared by all the kingdoms of the world. There's a big long list in those verses of all kinds of different kingdoms. My favourite one there is the kingdom of Buzz. How cool would it be to live in the kingdom of Buzz? But probably the most interesting one on that list is Jerusalem. Even Jerusalem, God's own people, have to drink the cup of wrath. This wrath that God is handing out, it's an impartial, measured judgment. Because all nations, all peoples, have offended him. And this is the unpopular part. It's our cup. We're the ones who should drink it. We are part of all the nations, aren't we? We have offended God. We deserve his wrath. And that's why it's so unpopular. Because when you say all the nations drink it, well, that's a bit out there. But us? We? Me? What did I do to offend God? Why do I deserve his wrath? Now, I could stand up here and give a long explanation of why we all deserve God's wrath. I could quote lots of Bible verses. And I don't actually think it would be helpful. All it's going to do is make me even more unpopular than I already am. This morning, I just want you to feel the badness of this cup. Worry about the sword that God has promised. Be afraid of drinking the cup. Feel its danger, the danger that it represents to us. Because in our passage, Jesus is the one who drinks it. Jesus gets the wrath, not us. You see that there in verse 22. Jesus says, are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink? Jesus snatches the cup away from us before we have to drink it. Now, Jesus knows that his walk, his travel to Jerusalem is going to end in drinking that cup on the cross. Now that's what verses 18 and 19 say. He knows it's coming, he knows it's going to come soon. It's going to be painful as well. It's going to be a painful, it'll be painful for Jesus to drink this cup of wrath. He doesn't say that in this passage. It's a week or so away. But on the day when he will die, on that first Good Friday, very early in the morning in the Garden of Gethsemane, we read this. Jesus began to be sorrowful and troubled, saying, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death." And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." See, while we deserve to drink the cup, God actually doesn't want us to. God does not want us to drink the cup. And he provides a way out so that we do not have to. That way out is Jesus. And that's what Easter is all about. This is the message of Easter. Jesus drinking the cup of wrath, which we should have drunk. Jesus taking the sword that Jeremiah spoke about on himself, the sword that was meant for us. Jesus suffering the pain on the cross that we should have experienced. Now, I'd like to think that this is why on Good Friday we don't eat chocolate. We don't eat all that yummy chocolate. We've got to wait until Easter Sunday when we celebrate Jesus' resurrection. If we want to do something now on Friday that involves some sort of food, something to remind us of what's going on, we should drink a little bit of wine. Just a little bit. A little bit of wine that's sour, that's bitter, that makes our face look like that. Because that is what the cup is all about. Now, interestingly, God doesn't make all the nations drink the cup just now. We don't have to drink the cup just now. Only Jesus drinks it. Now, make no mistake, there will be a time when everyone must drink the cup because of how they have hurt God. But not right now. God has given Jesus to rescue us, to save us. That's what we celebrate at Easter. He's given us plenty of time as well to let Jesus drink so we don't have to. 2,000 years of overtime is plenty of time. But that time will run out one day. And those who do not trust Jesus will have to drink that cup of wrath. Because at Easter time, the gift that Jesus gives is drinking this terrible cup so that we don't have to. Jesus' Easter gift is drinking this terrible cup so that we don't have to. What a fantastic gift. So if this morning you have not accepted that gift, let me urge you to do it. Let me urge you to accept it now, before time runs out. Let Jesus suffer, lest you hurt. Let Jesus drink the poison cup, lest you have to. Now, I've got a little loose end that I'd like to tidy up before we move on. It's about the disciples and it's about chairs. Now, when I was about 10 or so years old, my mum bought a chair. It was a black chair. It had a high back. It had armrests. And as a 10-year-old, it felt like a big, powerful sort of chair. And when I sat in it, I felt big and powerful. The only thing was that when my mum bought the chair, it was already second hand, so it was already a little bit worn. This is an artist's impression of what it might have looked like originally. When I was sitting in that chair, I felt great as a 10-year-old. This is an amazing, black, powerful chair. But fast forward 15 years, I looked at that chair again just before my mum threw it out. How ugly, how tacky, how old it had become. It was a decrepit chair. It was totally an illusion of any kind of power that I might have had. And that's what's going on here with these disciples. With all that Jesus has said, that he's going to the cross, that he's going to drink the cup, the disciples are sitting there wondering who are going to get the best seats. Who are going to get the seats of power? Who get to sit next to Jesus when he comes into his kingdom? It's just absurd. It's as absurd as my chair from when I was 10 years old. Easter has got nothing to do with power. Easter has got nothing to do with who gets the best seats. Easter is all about service. All about Jesus' service to us. Verse 28. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many, for us. And now it's at this point that I want to think a little bit more deeply about the wrath of God. I think the wrath of God has probably got to be the least popular part of the Christian faith. If we could get rid of the wrath of God, I'm sure it would make a lot of us more comfortable in our faith, particularly when we explain it to others. But here's the thing, even if we get Easter, even if we understand that Easter is all about Jesus taking God's wrath on himself so that we don't suffer, and if we say, look, that is fantastic, this is an amazing gift that God has given, why does God have to be so angry in the first place? Why make anyone drink the cup of wrath? Why even have a cup of wrath at all? Now, look, sure, lots of people have done bad things. Some of those things might even be pretty terrible, and if we sort of are honest with ourselves, maybe we've even done one or maybe two of those bad things. But if God is so loving, why can't he just forget all the bad stuff? Just ignore it. Pretend it didn't happen at all. Now look, many things could be said at this point, and many people have said lots of things. It'll probably be a lot smarter than what I'm about to say. But if you have more questions, you can talk to me about it later. I only want to say two things. We hurt God more than we imagine, but God's love is bigger than we can imagine. We hurt God more than we can imagine. God is more loving than we can imagine. First one about sin. We just don't understand, I think, how hurtful our sin is to God. Now, I struggle to understand this myself. I struggle to accept just the impact my sin has on God. And I'm going to struggle to explain it up here. I think there's lots of things going on there, but one of the big things is that I simply just haven't been offended in the same way that sin offends God. I've never been deeply offended by someone in that way. So there's a sense in which I'm actually glad to get God's perspective on sin from the Bible. Here's a verse from, again, back in the Old Testament, in the book of Exodus. The Lord said to Moses, "Let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against Israel, and I may consume them." This is God just inches away from destroying his own chosen people because of their sin. It's a sobering verse. In fact, I think it's downright the most scary verse in the whole Bible. particularly reflecting on the sin that is in my own life. But there's been a thing in the news recently that has, I suppose, helped me understand just what hurt is all about. The Royal Commission into Child Abuse. So much hurt to so many people over so many years, perpetrated by people who should have known a lot better. And I think it's brought into sharp focus by Cardinal Pell giving evidence in Rome. People from Australia have travelled all the way to Rome on the other side of the world just to sit in front of him and listen to what he said. Here's the thing, though. I don't think it mattered what George Pell said. There's nothing that can undo that level of hurt in people's lives. Nothing that can undo the damage. So many people have been scarred for life by things that are just terrible. No other way to describe them. And I do want to point out at this point that the Anglican Church, which we're under the banner of here this morning, is certainly not innocent in this matter, to our shame. But if that is how people can hurt in this world, how much more must our sin hurt God? How much more must God be scarred because of our sin? But we don't understand the depths of God's love either. God's a bit like a judge in a courtroom. He's presiding over a case, and it turns out to be against his childhood friend, a dear friend of his from long ago. He's considered the evidence. He's considered it carefully, and there's no question. His friend is guilty. Guilty of crimes that are so insidious and so terrible that commercial news won't even mention them. You can't even speak about it on Twitter or you'll get shut down. He wants to let his friend off. He wants him to go free, but he can't. He's unquestionably guilty, and this crime must go punished. And so in desperation, this judge, quite bizarrely, offers to swap places with his friend, to take the guilt, the ridicule, the shame, the punishment on himself, so that his friend can go free. This is what Easter's about, isn't it? God's love for us as the guilty ones, shown just like that judge, switching places, switching the guilty with the innocent, so that the beloved but guilty one can go free. God loves so much that he would rather his own son drink that cup of wrath than us, his beloved people. The Easter is where that awful and unpopular topic of God's wrath meets boundless, overflowing love. Now, just two little things to think about as before I finish up. It's Easter time. And one of the good things about Easter time is that it's been a long weekend. In fact, it's an extra long weekend. We have 2 extra days off. So let me commend to you to spend some of that extra time off remembering and thanking Jesus for drinking the cup. When you're eating all that yummy chocolate on Sunday, be thankful that we're not drinking that poison cup. And let Jesus drink it. Let Jesus drink the cup. There's no point in pretending that we can drink it. It's going to be awful. And there's no point in ignoring God, pretending that we won't have to drink it. God's wrath is real and terrible, but it's avoidable. It is totally avoidable if we trust Jesus to drink the cup for us. So let me finish up. It's Easter time. And at Easter time we celebrate. We celebrate being saved. Saved from what? Saved from drinking the cup of God's wrath. Although we were meant to drink it, Jesus drank it instead, out of love for his people, out of love for us. God's wrath is not popular, and it doesn't sit well with us. It certainly doesn't sit well with me. But Jesus' crucifixion, which we remember today on Good Friday, is where God's wrath and God's love meet. God's terrible, scary wrath. And God's even more amazing, even greater, totally boundless and overflowing love. Amen.